Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
After 10:30, that is to say 10:31, David Coleman joining us this morning. David, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you? Good
afternoon to you. That was last time we spoke was Late Late Show. Saoirse and Caroline.
That's right. The ISPCC Childline.
Thanks for doing that.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Yeah, I was delighted to be able to help out.
I think they reaped some financial dividend from the generosity of the viewers and listeners on that one.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's such a critical service that actually, you know, if it can't continue, it would be such a loss to children around the country. So hopefully we'll be able to keep supporting it and ultimately, I suppose, keep the money coming in to Childline, which is the important
thing. Which is the important thing. Thanks. Sharon was on to say, thanks to you and to Dave and Ryan. I texted 2 weeks ago about how much television I should a 2.5-year-old watch. And David said, none. And that day I went and I bought new toys and the television hasn't been on since. My daughter is like a new child. We are now, we're like a new family. Her speech and mood have improved so much. And I thought a bit of television in the evening was okay. And I think most parents think the same. Thanks again. Isn't there a result?
There you are.
Her speech has improved.
Well, of course, because...
And her mood has improved.
Yeah, because she's probably interacting with her parents more. Because that's the nature. When we turn off the television, we find other things to do. And typically that involves other people as well.
Yeah,
and so
true.
Any child who's, you know, talking more with their parents, listening more to their parents, interacting more with their parents is going to have massive improvements in terms
of...
Well,
I have to say, you're very good at your job.
Thanks very much, Ron.
Honestly.
That's lovely to get that feedback. I don't often get that kind of feedback, so it's really nice to hear.
It's really good. I'm delighted to hear that, because I was wondering, like, why do we bother sometimes? You know, just us here talking.
You and me just chatting.
Shooting the breeze. With the mood lighting on today.
It's very odd in here.
If you need some violins now, to keep it all going. If David Coleman's on today, can you please ask him about my 5-year-old who repeatedly apologises, often for nothing. This can upset him. And nothing can calm or stop him when he starts. It can be relentless, maybe 20 times at a go.
Yeah, I was just about to say that sounds more like a habit and it sounds like something perhaps that he's doing as a way of reducing anxiety. Perhaps a little bit like a compulsion or something like that. And not uncommon for children to get something like that.
Yeah, he's just alighted on the word sorry, is that it?
And then because perhaps he's waiting for a particular kind of response from his mum or his dad then to fit with what whatever it is he feels he's apologising for, and when he doesn't get that, then he just continues on with the sorry, or whatever it is.
So how do you
knock
that out of the system?
Well, a lot of the time is to let him know that you've heard him. So just be very clear and say, I've heard you say sorry, good boy. And then, you know, try and withdraw your attention from it. Because
Should you say, don't be sorry, you've done nothing wrong?
Well, it depends on the situation because, you know, ultimately most 5-year-olds who are saying sorry are not saying sorry because they're feeling remorse or conscience prick. It's more because they are actually just doing it out of rote because that's what they've learned to say when they're in trouble. So don't worry about telling him he's nothing to apologise for because actually no 5-year-old has much to apologise for really because... you know, they act in terms of what's going on inside their head and their mood and so on. And really, you know, you can't expect them to take too much responsibility. So really, it's just about us guiding it. So there isn't ever anything for 5-year-olds particularly to apologise for. Mm-hmm. What we really want, of course, is their behaviour to change if their behaviour has been misbehaviour of some kind. So, but let him know that you've heard him because it may be that he just feels like he's not acknowledged or I'm not quite sure what it is he's looking for every time he keeps repeating it. But that would be the key, I suppose, to try and work out. And if it does continue, it is the kind of thing it might be useful for somebody else to have a bit of observation of. So, you know, get somebody else outside to see, can they spot, is there a pattern to it? Does he say it at particular times? Does it change depending on what the mum or the dad's response to it is? Because if it's the case that he repeats it more, if he's entirely ignored, then you obviously need to give some acknowledgement of what he's saying. If it's the case that he repeats it more when the parents engage with him, then it might be about the attention that he's receiving for saying all these sorries that makes it, you know, reinforcing for him to continue. So that's, I suppose, what might help them to get a steer in terms of what to do next.
Okay, were we going to talk about parents fighting in front of kids, or was that something else? Maybe in a minute.
No,
that was on the agenda. It is.
Have you something to tell us?
No, I certainly
did. You have a big fight?
I didn't. You're listening, but I do have a note I want to bring to your attention, which is coming in the door now to me. I'm speaking slowly and now it's landed. Okay, so here it is. What about... No, here, I'll do that in a second. Bit nervous about emailing you as I'm not sure what is really happening and maybe it's our own fault. I have a beautiful six-year-old boy who's healthy and is really good most of the time. However, we have been struggling with his behaviour this year. He's extremely moody. He can get hyper, sometimes go off in a tantrum, lose it completely. I'm sure the neighbours must think we're terrible parents. It often causes an argument between my wife and I. We're so physically tired and drained on days that it's easier not to correct him just to avoid a meltdown. He has no problems in school or socially. He is addicted to all types of sports, especially soccer and Munster rugby. I'm not sure where we can turn or who to talk to, but all I know is that we need some help. For instance, yesterday he was so angry over his tablet not working, he tried to break it over his knee. Occasionally he might hit his mother, and I know she does not always tell me the full extent of his behaviour when I come home from work. I would be very grateful for some advice or any ideas that you can shed.
Well, I suppose there's a whole range of different things potentially going on, but one of the things is to, I mean, if they're looking for help, you're going to look for somebody like me, I suppose. You're looking for a clinical psychologist, somebody who can, again, help to understand what might be going on in terms of why it is that he has tantrums at particular times. Is there any kind of trigger? Is there anything that will consistently lead to some kind of distress for him? And if there is, well, then that might give you a clue as to where to go in terms of resolving it. But the big thing, I suppose, again, with six-year-olds is that a lot of the time their behaviour is their way of trying to tell us that something just isn't quite right in their world, and so they act out, I suppose is the phrase that we use. They act out their internal stresses or distresses, and it may be that something is bothering them. And so he's showing this by throwing those tantrums. It may be that he just feels frustrated or cross about something else, and then it comes out in a tantrum. And again, a bit of detective work from the moment the dad might help to just try and work out, if they can, what might be leading to those tantrums, because that's really ultimately the key to resolving it. But an awful lot of empathy, you know, no point again in punishing 6 year olds for throwing tantrums. A lot of the time it's just about trying to understand what might be going on, see if you can see it from their perspective. Because when we empathise, when we connect with the feelings that underlie all these tantrums, what we find is that it just takes the intensity out of it. It's like, just kind of putting a pin into a balloon and the intensity goes out. And so the tantrum, while, you know, they may still occur, they'll be a lot briefer and less stressful.
Okay, we're going to talk to Jane, who's on the line there. Hi, Jane.
Hi, good morning, Ryan.
How are you doing today?
Not too bad. I'm just out walking now, so if you hear noise of cars, that's what it is.
That's all right. You're doing fine. And you have a 9-year-old daughter.
I do. I have nine. She's nine and a few months now.
Yeah.
She was diagnosed with high functioning autism about 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
She's a super little girl. She battles so much. She's amazing. But she has a huge fear of balloons, which literally means we can pretty much go nowhere with her. It's a... in shopping centres, supermarkets, parties, you know, even McDonald's, you can't even go through a drive-thru sometimes because there'll be balloons outside. It's just everywhere, more than, you know, you'd even realise. So it's just becoming a huge, huge thing with us now. So I just don't really know what to do next.
What happens when she sees a balloon?
She literally starts, you know, it's like panic attack. Fingers go in the ears. She would run anywhere just to get away from them. It's just a dreadful way to see anybody. She just, it's a genuine, huge fear. It's like as if, you know, she's seen a ghost or something. She just wants to get out of there. And even if we do go somewhere and there's not balloons, she's constantly on the lookout for them. Therefore, just creating massive anxiety and just huge fear in her.
Has she explained to you what she's worried about or what she's afraid of?
Yeah. Oh, God, like we've spoke about it so many times.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know, and she just says, I think the thought of someone blowing up the balloon, that is just, she just can't even bear the thought of that. When the balloon is up, she just thinks it's going to burst. I think it's the noise. Now, she has had issues with noise in the past, but it's that she's overcome so many obstacles, you know, over the years, thanks to it, fantastic. She's in mainstream school and they're absolutely amazing with her. But I think it's the fear of the balloon actually bursting. It's the fright, it's the noise.
Jane, hi, how are you doing? David here.
Hi, David.
I guess, you know, even just listening, and as soon as you said that she puts her fingers in her ears when she sees the balloons, you know, I was thinking maybe she has a particular sensitivity to the noise and, as you say, just that fear that it's going to pop. if it's such a, you know, and it seems well-established phobia for her at this stage,
yeah,
I think it's really time to go get some professional help, particularly as she has Asperger's or, you know, high-functioning autism or whatever it is that she has. Because, you know, you may find that even if you're trying to help her yourself, it just may not be targeted enough, may not be focused enough. So I'd be going back to whatever professionals you've been dealing with in terms of just getting an understanding of you know, her diagnosis when you got the high-functioning autism diagnosis, because you obviously were in touch with various professionals there, and get them either to get involved again in terms of a proper treatment plan for phobia reduction, which really means, you know, her being taught a series of relaxation exercises, which she can then use as she becomes gradually closer to the stimulus that it is that she fears. So again, I think I've talked about this before in terms of phobias. It might be that you're showing her pictures of balloons and then you see balloons in the distance, come closer to balloons, and ultimately that she can even be in a room when a balloon pops, so that she knows that there's nothing that she can be, you know, that she can kind of regulate that feeling, that she can bring down the anxiety, because it's just the anxiety spiraling, I suppose, that leaves her so uncomfortable, you know, that sense of panic.
We were diagnosed, or she was diagnosed there about 4 years ago, and we did immediately go and get OT and, you know, behavioural therapy, all this kind of stuff. And really, to be honest with you, David, they couldn't do anything. They literally washed their hands of it. We tried everything, went private. We went through the HSE, and there was no support whatsoever. They just, look, they did their best, I suppose, but they just couldn't get through to her. She's just adamant and very set that this is, you know, her fear, and there's not, like, I couldn't see, you know, her standing in a, you know, room with a balloon. I'm hoping she will be able to eventually, but we did go the route of getting help, and so much so that it actually stressed her out even more, because we were bringing up the subject of balloons or other inflatable things like that, and we just kept hitting a wall for years and years. And eventually she actually even asked me herself, can we just stop doing this? It's upsetting me more than helping me, you know. So we kind of let it go for a while, but it's just there, and it's just becoming, it's really just inhibiting so much family life that
What may have been missing, you know, is that if she was younger, I mean, she's only 9 now, didn't you say? You know, so if this was 3 or 4 years ago and she was 6 or 7, like, it's difficult enough for 6 and 7 year olds to learn relaxation techniques that are effective. Because, you know, the most common one that we use is a breathing technique. And actually, it's quite difficult to learn it. And so I would suggest that now that she's a little bit older, just focus perhaps on getting some help with learning the relaxation techniques. Don't worry too much about the exposure to the balloons. Don't even make it linked to balloons. Just have it about her learning how to relax, her learning how to be in charge of some of her feelings. Because I guess, again, you know, a lot of children with high functioning autism or any kind of ASD, you know, often struggle with their feelings and making sense of their feelings and expressing and regulating their feelings. So I think, you know, that might be the way to go. Rather than focusing on the balloons for now, just help her to learn how to relax. And then once she knows how to regulate that feeling, then you can go back and start a program perhaps towards understanding the balloons and the fact that they're not going to kill her, or whatever it is that she's afraid of.
Okay. And would, just one last question. Would you go with the route of cognitive behaviour? I just heard that lady there about her car, and mine had mentioned that word.
Cognitive.
And someone, cognitive behaviour therapy, would that be the route to go? I read up about it, but I just didn't know kind of where to start. And then, you know, like, everything is, it's forgotten about then for a while. But would that be the route, or would you be OT or...
No, cognitive behavioral therapy is the treatment of choice for phobias, because what you learn, I suppose, is in terms of your behavior, you learn not to avoid. In terms of the cognitions, you learn to challenge some of the beliefs about this thing being dangerous. And then at the same time, you're addressing the physicality of the anxiety, and you're learning how to relax properly. So, you know, those three things all combined can give you a very different attitude to the thing that it is that you're frightened of. So, yeah, that is the way to go if you can find somebody who's good at it. And also, obviously, somebody who's going to have an understanding of the ASD as well, because that's a little complicating factor. Potentially. So good luck trying to find that person.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Oh, me too.
And it's funny, as you're talking, balloons are everywhere.
They're everywhere.
Everywhere.
They are everywhere.
Yeah, I can feel your pain. I understand. Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
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 Listen, I hope she's okay. Look after yourself.
Thanks a million. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. David, my best friend has a 7-year-old child. And my friend has no problem in letting this child sit in on conversations between adults. And it really annoys me, as I find we're always filtering the conversations. My friend has no problem with this, but I know I'm not on my own with this annoyance. Her daughter would rather earwig in on our conversations than go and play. I have my own kids and see other friends with kids, and they don't act like this.
Yeah. Well, what to do? I mean, you just talk to your friend and you say,
listen, I
can't talk to you properly, exactly, and explain that you're trying to filter stuff and explain that, look, it's hardly worth our while if your daughter's going to be here and we feel like we can't actually talk about the things that are really important. And, you know, while it's not that I want to have every conversation private and confidential, there are certain things that I really don't want to be worried about what impact it's having on a seven-year-old. And so could you support us by encouraging your seven-year-old to go off and play and rather than just, you know, kind of allowing her to be part of our conversation? Because, I mean, you know, ultimately it's the mum's prerogative to let her daughter sit wherever she wants. And
but is, I love the, is a seven-year-old like a little fun-sized journalist, you know, who goes off then to the playground going, hey, read all about it. Mum's going to the shops on Tuesday, you know, getting all the scoop. You know, just really just kind of interested in the world. And
yeah. That was you, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. No, it was, funny enough, it wasn't really. I wasn't...
Weren't you? I thought you might have been, because you have that genuine engagement in the world and what's going on. You know, you do have that in...
I played outside.
Did you?
Played a lot. You okay. know, played stuff with friends. I had a friend.
God, I believe you.
I made him up. We hung out everywhere together. No. But see, I had a younger brother as well, so you know that matters too. So he could just hang out with him and people on the road. I loved it.
Hmm.
Did a milk round once.
Did you?
Yeah, on the old milk van. You know the one in Father Ted?
Yeah.
It was like one of those with the up at about 5:30 every morning one summer. It was magical. I'll never forget it. And then you go 1-1. Two and a yogurt and a yop or whatever it was. And then do you remember the little things that have these little some houses had the little box with the arrow saying 2 pints
down. Oh yes,
1 pint down one day. And yeah, and I stank like sour milk for about 3 hours until I got rid of it, but it was lovely.
Yeah,
everyone, and then I used to get like a few yogurts for my troubles.
It's funny that the milk stories. I can remember cycling up to the local shop. We lived in Kildare at the time, cycling up to the local shop, crossing a busy main road with a six bottle carrier.
Yeah,
you know, you'd carry by hand, but kind of, you know, loosely balanced on the bike carrier
with the glass bottles.
And then you'd have to make sure that, because we get 3 pints of milk, so you put one and then two in the other corner, so it'll be all balanced. Yeah, and you try and cycle home without them falling off.
That's it.
No strapping. No nothing.
No mess. No health. No safety. David Coleman, today we leave it, but we'll see you before Christmas because obviously, you know, things are hotting up in the kitchen in every houses around the country now for the next few weeks. So we'll need to try and keep everyone's nerves nice and calm.
I'll be here.
Thanks as always. Good to see you. And we'll take a break. Just when you thought it was safe to listen to the radio, David Coleman staying with us for a second because we have another Jane on the line here who wants to talk to us. Good morning to you, Jane.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
I'm good. And like so many of us last Sunday night waiting for the new Band-Aid single on X Factor, and along comes Bob Geldof and introduces the new song. But first, a little clip.
And I told I have two daughters, and I said, close your eyes now just for a second. But of course, they wanted to see what they were missing. And they saw the body being taken out, and my 8-year-old got a panic attack.
Just to explain, so this was they were showing the effect of Ebola on the human body, and there was a woman, a person, I couldn't even tell, who was being carried by the ankles and by the wrists, you know, out a door, and skin and bone, and that was the thing. I watched it myself because I said to my 9-year-old, eyes down, they went down, but apparently in school the next day it was all the talk. Some girls didn't know what they'd just witnessed. Others had parents turned the phone, they had TV off, and others had eyes down. So, but like you say, through the hand and through the fingers, the eyes open, and your daughter saw.
Yeah, absolutely. We've all done it. We've all watched what we were told not to, because we want to see what we're not allowed to. But my daughter, she just kind of exploded in the seat. We've been having problems with a few years with her tummy. It's always in knots, and we've gone to the hospital, done all the tests. There's nothing physically wrong with her. She's just a ball of nerves. She likes everything to be perfect. But last Sunday night, she just kind of jumped up in the seat. It was her tummy, her head. She couldn't breathe. So I started doing breathing exercises with her. Just to try and calm her, but it was a few hours before I did get her settled and calmed enough to go to sleep.
Well, it sounds, Jane, like you've actually handled it very well. I suppose the key is, you know, what's her understanding of what it was that she witnessed now? And that is the key thing for anybody who might have, you know, had young children with them and that came on the TV. Because ultimately what children need is a context for that kind of graphic scene that they witness. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, to be honest, it probably isn't fair of X Factor to put that on. You know, I mean, it might have been a real misjudgment on their part, given just the shocking nature of it and the fact that, you know, children don't have the same kind of filters. They don't have the same resources to be resilient in the face of that until such time as they get the support from us adults. So, you know, the key thing is, you know, what you were able to do is you were able to soothe and regulate your daughter's distress on the night. So you were able to help her calm down, which of course gives her the at least knowledge that she can calm herself down, that this isn't something that will always continue to spiral. But then it's about talking about the incident, even though you think, well, I'm not going anywhere near that again now because she'll just get distressed again. Actually, it might help her to ensure that she doesn't dwell on it or continue to dwell on it. So do occasionally say to her, gosh, you know, I still think about that that poor woman or that poor man or whoever, you know, the sex of the person who's been lifted out. But you know, just talk about, you know, I still think about that and that was really shocking or that was very scary or wasn't it very frightening to think of somebody being that sick and dying in that way? And that allows her at least to talk about it a little bit more, which means that you can then understand if there are any other fears that she might have, because some of the other stuff obviously is the fears that kids have that this might be literally around the corner from them, that you know, somebody's going to be carried out of the house next door with the same kind of sickness or illness. And that's the kind of stuff where we need to be able to reassure them, but we can only reassure children when we know that they fully understand what it is that they've experienced and what it is that that has actually happened. So we need to be really supportive and understanding, and then we can be reassuring and do keep conversations open, just so that your children have a freedom that they feel it's okay to talk about this stuff. And that usually helps most children then process it and make sense enough of it that it doesn't dwell.
Yes, I have been doing that since if the outbreak of Ebola has been brought to everybody's attention. My daughter is, she's been kind of obsessed with, you know, not being able to control this, not being able to cure these people. And I've told her, you know, and that it's okay, you know, more people have died of hunger, they've died of, and I know that's probably putting more fear into my child, but I've told her it's not as, we haven't got it here, nobody in Ireland has it, it's unlikely we're going to get it.
Jane, you know, absolutely. And the key thing is just, you know, I suppose from your perspective, you know, that this is something that will pass, you know, and you do need to reassure her, but also don't let her spiral, you know, into, you know, the fears, I suppose, that that this is around the corner, because it's not, you know. And again, you know, do try and shield her from all the talk about Ebola. And it may be that just because she's anxious anyway, that this is a good, you know, a good thing for her to become anxious about now. It's like a good source for her anxiety, even though, but it might be worth getting some help with her general anxiety anyway.
Yeah, I have tried, because she's very anxious about everything, you know, and it's everything upsets her, you know, because she can't control it. And
so maybe some professional help, I think, at this stage, Jane, for her, just to deal with that generalized anxiety.
Good luck with it, Jane. I hope it works out for you, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for talking to us this morning. David Coleman, now goodbye.
Goodbye now.
But thank you.